You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines around the area this last week, and there's been a lot. Joining us live in studio today, Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Mike Sharp with KIVI 6 on your side, and Boise State Public Radio's George Prentice. Welcome, George.
Good to be here.
I know. On this side, yes. On this side of it, yeah, now, right? Exactly. And welcome to Mike and Betsy as well. I feel like I'm new. It's been a while since I've done the roundtable. I've taken a lot of summer vacation. All right, let's get right into this. The letter that was sent to the new Boise State University president, President Trump, this was from Representative Ehart, but also overall 28 legislators signed this letter. Betsy, as you said before we came on air, this is just the gift that keeps giving. There is so much going on with this.
This has sparked so much debate and dissension. And of course, it was immediately followed up by another letter signed by all 21 Democratic legislators in both houses, taking completely the opposite side and standing up for diversity and inclusion programs at Boise State. Boise State students have organized a rally on the state capitol steps for this Saturday at noon. And President Trump, who is just settling in and wasn't even in town when this was happening, has yet to give in-depth interviews about it. But I believe that will be coming in the next few weeks. And I thought some of the information that surfaced here on Idaho Matters when Representative Ehart and Representative Erpelding talked about these issues was very interesting, that some of the basic facts in the original letter may have been misstated. I think we all have a lot more to learn about this and about what diversity and inclusion programs at our state universities are and have been for many years and why, and what our legislators' attitudes are, and how that even plays in with the national debate right now about diversity and inclusion and race and what role that plays in our society. So I don't think we've heard the end of this conversation one bit.
And I want to make a quick note. If you have a comment or a question and you want to get that in for our roundtable, go to Twitter. Use the hashtag Idaho Matters. We're going to be monitoring that for about the next 10 minutes or so. So if you have a comment about this, we definitely want to hear it and we could get it on the air. And George, going back to this letter, you actually spoke with the director of diversity and inclusion at Boise State University.
We did. This morning, we had Francisco Salinas on Morning Edition. We thought it would be interesting to spend some time in the office. It's an office that was started 11 years ago, interestingly enough, through student fees, not through tax dollars. It was student fees that created his position. He welcomes this conversation. He's anxious to have this conversation of what they do, what they don't do. And he made a point of also telling us that he's heard from a number of students who are worried.
Absolutely. We've had visits from lots of students who are concerned, feel as though this is an attack on things that they value. And what we have to say for students, we're here, and we're here for you. And we're going to continue to support you in the ways that we can. And, you know, the development of our institutional sort of evolution as we continue to change and improve, that is something that is a conversation for all of us to be involved in, including our president and these legislators.
A conversation that he's anxious to have.
And which is fascinating when we get back to this idea around the student fees, because that was a big part of this letter that was written was,
it, 22 tuition.
Right. And George, you made the comment in the newsroom before we came on the air.
If we want to have a conversation about causes of rising tuition at state universities in the U.S., we ought to be talking about funding from Idaho legislative bodies.
Absolutely. And there's good reason for that. In the tough times, in the downturn of the economy, higher education was almost seen as a piggy bank. The legislature seriously cut the proportion of higher education that was funded from the state general fund because, unlike most other government services, there was another source to turn to, and that was student fees and tuition. And that is why student fees and tuition now pay far more of the share of cost of higher education in Idaho than they did just 10 or 20 years ago.
And I believe when Representative Erpelding and Representative Ehart were on the program on Monday, Representative Erpelding had those numbers, and I mean, it has drastically shrunk over the last, you know, decade to 15 years.
The percentages are pretty staggering. And there has been a movement over the past few years by the institutions of higher education in Idaho to persuade the legislature to up the funding. And one thing that they pushed was to start a higher education stabilization fund, a rainy day savings account for higher ed, just like we have for public schools when there are shortfalls. And so finally, the legislature created that account, but they've hardly put any money in it. It really hasn't gotten off the ground.
George, you just got done this morning with a conversation with Boise Mayor Dave Beter, and he commented on this.
Indeed he did. Like you said, Betsy, the story has legs. Boise State is in the city of Boise. He's meeting with President Trump next week on this issue, among other things, and he had a few things to say about this, too.
To say the Idaho way is their way is the height of arrogance. You know, we're a big state geographically. It's, you know, inherent is that if you disagree with us, that's not the Idaho way, and that is offensive, I think. We ought to push back hard against that, and I'm happy for the question so I can do some of that.
And speaking of Mayor Beter, Mike, I want to bring you into the conversation because Don Nelson sat down with Mayor Beter.
Right. We had some pretty big questions for him, looking at, you know, outside of this big pressing issue with the university, looking at growth in general, talking about future plans. You know, this is a significant challenge he's facing in this election. So we wanted to get a real vision from him on what he expects to do in the next term if he gets it. And when talking about growth, you know, he's talking about expanding Boise into southeast Boise, as well as expanding upward, enabling Boise to expand outward and upward is you know, part of his goal, and, you know, dissuading fears as much as he can of what we've seen in the Treasure Valley in the last 5 years, this growing anti-growth sentiment that's happening, and kind of trying to face, you know, the vanishing Boise's head on and say, while this growth is creating growing pains, that there is some sort of plan, even behind closed doors, that is in place to make it a little bit easier.
Did he talk at all about that in regards to affordability, though? Because, yes, there's growth, but so many people say they can't afford to even be within the city limits of Boise anymore.
Right. And with that answer, he pivoted. So he really – what he wanted to focus on was the work with homelessness, right? The work with kind of that other – the really far end of that spectrum, people who can't afford to live anywhere, right? So he talked about, you know, the 400 homes or 400 living spaces that were created in livable or in cost – benefited properties. So so his focus was saying, hey, look, you know, we're working with these communities. We're trying to find ways to find affordable housing for the people who can't afford it. But no, that there isn't really a conversation for the next rung up, the people who maybe don't qualify for Section 8 housing, but also somehow don't qualify to live in the North End.
All right. Yeah. We're talking with Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Mike Sharp with KIVI 6 on your side, and our own George Prentice. This is our Friday Reporter Roundtable. If you have comments or questions, we are monitoring Twitter. Just use the hashtag Idaho Matters. Betsy, a news conference this morning about the Idaho Lottery.
That's right. Every year, the Idaho Lottery holds a press conference and presents giant checks to the governor and the superintendent of schools for the dividend from the profits that the lottery made each year. And today happens to be the 30th anniversary of the sale of the very first Idaho lottery ticket. And they went back to the same place where it happened, the steps of the Idaho Capitol, to have their little ceremony today. And they recalled that the person who bought that first ticket was the late billionaire J.R. Simplot. And When that was mentioned, the governor was heard to mutter.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking, George. Did he won, didn't he?
He won.
The governor was heard to mutter, it was the worst bet he ever made.
Oh.
And I asked him afterwards what he meant by that. And he is a big booster of the Idaho Lottery. And he said that J.R. Simplot loved to gamble, but he always wanted to know the odds. And he would never enter a casino because of the rake-off there. He preferred other types of gambling. But that even though the governor acknowledges the odds of winning the lottery are not that great. He pushed back really hard against criticism that the Idaho lottery takes money out of the economy and creates victims and is useless and so forth, which were pretty much expounded by Wayne Hoffman of the Idaho Freedom Foundation in a column last week. The governor said that people are going to engage in gaming, particularly now with all the offshore gaming sites that are available, and many are fraudulent. And he would much rather have them participate in the Idaho lottery, where there are strict controls and accountability, and a portion of the profits goes to Idaho's public schools and public buildings, profits that have added up to nearly $1 billion over the last 30 years. And today's dividend was a record at $60 million.
Wow. But if you think about that, Betsy, that's such a good point, that gaming will happen no matter what type of controls you put on it. So at least in this sense, some of that money is going back into the Idaho coffers.
And the governor even said, this is Governor Little told the Idaho Press today, and we will have a story tomorrow, that what's wrong with people having a little hope in their lives? That maybe that's a good thing. Also, the lottery director, Jeff Anderson.
And a few less dollars.
The lottery director, Jeff Anderson, pointed out that 20% of the sales of Idaho lottery tickets are to out-of-state residents.
Really?
Many of those are to Utah residents who cross the state line and buy them over in little old Franklin County, where we have huge sales of the Idaho lottery, simply because Utah doesn't have a state lottery. And so Idaho's public schools and buildings are benefiting from Utahns' desire to do a little gambling that they can't do in their own state.
So we appreciate that. Thank you for helping our schools. And you also covered, you've been all over the place today, Betsy. So you also covered the latest on the administrative rules as
That's
well.
That's right. Governor Little went straight from the lottery press conference to a press conference in his office with legislative leaders, where he announced the next step in Idaho's review of administrative rules. Already, more than 30% of Idaho's administrative rules through this process have been either eliminated or simplified, streamlined, or pared down. And their message today was there's more coming. It's a result of efforts that already were in the works under what the governor called the Licensing Freedom Act to get all of the state's occupational licensing boards and commissions to look at their practices and see if there is pruning that needs to be done there to make what's on the books and the processes that we have more simple for Idahoans to comply with. And the idea that was expressed by both the legislative leaders and the governor was not necessarily that we don't license or regulate. Senator Brent Hill, the president pro tem of the Senate, said, you know, as a longtime CPA, he was licensed and regulated, and there are good reasons for that. But that the regulations be things that people can understand so they can easily comply with them. And that simplification process is what's in the works. The governor and the legislative leaders also talked about how much attention Idaho has been getting. Whenever legislators go to national conferences with other legislators, apparently if they're wearing an Idaho tag, legislators from other states come up to them and say, what are you doing in Idaho? You're cutting regulations. Oh, I wish my state could do that.
That's pretty funny. George, as we mentioned earlier, you had a sit down today with Boise Mayor Dave Beter. And one of the things that came up were potential ICE raids.
Well, he hadn't heard about them yet, so we had to bring it to his attention. But indeed, Twitter and Facebook have lit up, particularly and initially in the Magic Valley, about rumors of ICE raids. In a number of Idaho cities, and one of the cities, by the way, was Boise on that list. And the rumors included comments that federal agents had actually booked rooms at a local motel in the Magic Valley, and the motel owner would not confirm or deny that. But it went as far as a Latino music festival canceling this weekend because of this. Indeed, we've got a growing number of American cities and a number of American mayors who are pushing back against ICE actions, but there's really not much a mayor or a chief of police can do when federal agents want to do their business. And Mayor Beter made sure to say, hey, look, that's not part of our purview, but help me out with this. Is there a crime problem I'm not aware of? We just released a crime report this week that showed that we're on a significant downward trend, et cetera. That said, these type of rumors are troubling. To him and to a number of people. And God help you when social media fans that flame.
Oh, well, I mean, to the point that, as you said, I mean, a music festival
commerce now.
Right,
yeah.
Has been canceled this coming weekend.
And this festival is a touring music festival, and Boise was one of its tours. So we'll see if they go through with that. But it's pretty big news right now in the Magic Valley. It has a number of people on edge. Mm-hmm. And there's so many layers to this story. Just this morning, we heard that the quote-unquote test census is going out to a number of Americans, including some folks in Idaho. This is not the official 2020 census, but they're sending out sample census questionnaires. And on some of those, they're actually asking, are you a citizen? In spite of the fact that as of now, that's not going to be on the 2020 census.
But people don't necessarily know that. So if this shows
that could
up,
trigger your participation or lack thereof in next year's census.
So go back, George, to what Mayor Beter was saying about mayors really don't have any power in this situation,
other than the soapbox, you know, the bully pulpit. And by the way, he's not shy to share about remind us that Boise is, in his words, a welcoming city and a diverse city. And the face of Boise is continuing to evolve. And then all of a sudden, it blends into this other conversation about diversity and inclusion. And again, there, you know, it's a dotted line, but it's a bigger conversation about the others, folks who don't look like us, folks who may not have been born here, and yet they are living next door. They're going to school with us. They're working with us. They are us. Mm-hmm. And he's anxious to have that conversation, too.
Well, I mean, and while, you know, the four of us are sitting here talking, I mean, our newsrooms also have the others, right? Like, I mean, we know
right.
The people. People are being affected by this in a very real way. And if you're talking, it goes beyond, you know, a music festival. You're talking about people possibly being unwilling to leave their house and go to a restaurant and go to any other public event that's going on. I mean, the
effect can be big. Or even getting medical care. How about that?
Right.
If there's a medical emergency. I mean, it is going that far.
But anyone who doesn't think this story is not an Idaho story isn't paying attention. I mean, goodness knows on the network news we're seeing demonstrations in other parts of the country. But this story is, if it's not in the storefront window yet of Idaho, it soon will be.
You know, and not to get too wonky on it, it's a story I'm working on for the coming months. When you are looking at the 2020 redistribution of voting lines, I mean, the possibility of losing any percentage of people in Idaho. I mean, the last I heard talking to somebody, they said that they thought Idaho was going to fall about 15,000 voters short of a new congressional district. So to think, you know, cutting any people, right, that's not many. Uh-huh. I mean, you're talking about the difference between, you know, three representatives or four representatives and five. It has a direct effect on our representation in Washington, and people should be paying attention to it.
That said, correct me if I'm wrong, and Betsy will know this, the governor's census committee – he has a new census committee, so it sounds as if, you know, they've got their work cut out for them. I think they meet next week for the
first their time. First meeting is coming right up, and the governor appointed former House Minority Leader Wendy Jaquit and Idaho Secretary of State Lawrence Denny to co-chair that committee. And they are very focused on getting a complete count in Idaho, because that plays into all kinds of formulas that dictate how much federal funding Idaho receives for specific programs where there are great needs.
It's a huge story.
Well, and as Mike pointed out, I mean, you're looking, 15,000 people, that is a small, small number to possibly get another congressional district, and how that would play out. So, George, at this point, these are rumors about the raids.
Yep.
But
that said, promoters heard enough to cancel a fairly significant event. Obviously, a number of people are not going to be employed or paid, obviously, attending the festival. So it has a commercial impact.
Well, we're in the middle of our Friday Reporter Roundtable. My panel today, Boise State Public Radio's George Prentice, KIVI 6 on your side's Mike Sharp, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press. So, Betsy, let's talk about fire season, because normally this time of year, here we are, middle of July, usually the skies in the Treasure Valley are filled with smoke. We are not seeing that, and everyone's, crossing their fingers that we don't.
So far, so good down here in our part of the state. And this has been kind of an odd year, although our biggest fire risk really is still to come. Mm-hmm. I mean, the month of August and into September are really worst for us. But this year has been unusual in that early in the season, the state brings on a bunch of firefighters, and typically they go to other states to help out. And usually it's New Mexico, Arizona, places down in the desert southwest. This year we've been sending folks to Canada and Alaska. That's where the biggest fires are. And coming up for this year's fire season, the prediction is that the North Idaho Panhandle is going to have an above normal wildfire season, whereas Southern Idaho is supposed to be about normal, whatever normal
whatever
is.
That looks like.
And the state land board this week got an update on the fire season, and the costs so far are about $3 million. Even though we've hardly had any fires, there is a fairly decent sized one going on national forest lands right now in the Stanley area. But those costs include the contracted aircraft costs for the entire year. So we know we're going to spend at least that, and we're heading into – and those aircraft now are not only contracted but placed around the state and ready to go for when wildfire season hits, because it will.
Right. I mean, we need to take the blue skies not for granted right now.
100 degrees, I think, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday
right.
in the valley, and unstable air usually follows.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Mike, you guys have had a really interesting piece about Indian Creek Plaza in Caldwell that's coming up, the one-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've spoken with Mayor Nankolas here on the program. I mean, he was born and raised in Caldwell. And one of his visions was to really, truly revitalize Caldwell.
I mean, since before he was mayor. I mean,
right?
That was one of his focuses. And I mean, I grew up in Caldwell, and it was always this running joke about, you know, if you open up Indian Creek, it's just going to solve a bunch of murders. It's not going to attract anybody. Like, that was where Caldwell was at that point.
I'm sorry, this was a joke?
Yes.
I mean, okay. did they solve any murders?
Yeah, great question.
Right.
That needs to be an
investigative
piece.
It does.
Can we pause for a moment? Oh, okay, I'm good. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to look at the one-year anniversary and try to quantify what that meant. You know, it's so easy to say it meant X millions of dollars in economic impact, but like, what does that really mean? Where did that money come from? Who's coming here? And one of the interesting things he said was that they watched, especially the 7th Street Bridge, and they looked at during the winter months to see how many vehicles were making it over. And before Indian Creek Plaza came, they hit about 140,000 vehicles during this time when they were watching. In the year after, they hit more than 400,000, right? So that shows, I mean, that's nearly three times the amount of people that are traveling into that direct part of town. And then we talked to some local businesses, and the one that really hit me was Indian Creek Steakhouse, because they were talking about the fact that they used to actually park out front because they wanted to look busy. So they would have their employees park out front, and then the construction starts, right? So then they get a dip. And the mayor's trying to convince everybody, you know, hold tight.
Calm down. It's
keep your
be
business.
Okay. Yeah.
It's going to iron out. And at this point, they said that their business has more than doubled, that they no longer are parking out front. They're running out of parking in general. So, I mean, these effects are very real. I mean, you're talking about more jobs. You're talking about dozens or at least more than a dozen of new businesses that are down there, coffee shops and cool hip places that definitely didn't exist when I was working at King's down there when I was 16. So, it seems like it has been revitalized. There's you know, looking back historically, you know, Caldwell lost out when they didn't get the Karcher Mall. Downtown Caldwell just kind of plummeted after that. They lost the Sears store, and a lot of businesses ended up leaving. So this is a really big deal to try to, you know, Caldwell's not a small town anymore, especially in Idaho standards. So having a robust downtown is a big deal.
Well, and it's funny that you say, you know, you grew up in Caldwell and, you know, and what it used to be like. My husband says that about growing up in Boise, that, I mean, there really was no downtown. I mean, he talks about, you know, you went to Karcher Mall. There was no Boise Town Square Mall. And Betsy, you made a really interesting point off the air about this correlation between the Grove.
Yeah. Back in the late 80s, I was the City Hall reporter for the Statesman, and I covered the Boise Redevelopment Agency, the BRA, and the early days of redevelopment of downtown Boise. And one of the key things they did was develop the Grove Plaza, even when part of what surrounded it was still barren gravel parking lots, because that was going to be the centerpiece that was going to stir activity again in downtown Boise. And look at it now. Look at what surrounds it. That's when they started the Alive After 5 event, Alive After 5 in the Grove. And the idea was that at 5 o'clock, everybody left downtown Boise and nobody wanted to come back. And there was a reason there for some people to stay downtown. Well, you sure don't need a reason these days.
No, not at all.
Alive After 5 is still cooking.
Well, and what's interesting to me, and Mike, you know, I think you could maybe touch on this, is that here you have, you know, there's Boise. And, you know, you've got Meridian and Nampa-Caldwell. What is the sense in the city of Nampa, though? Because in a way, I mean, Nampa was a bigger city than Caldwell. I mean,
it still is.
It still is. Yeah. But yet, Caldwell, when you have this kind of downtown core, like Indian Creek Plaza, is there a place for Nampa to do something like that? Do they want to? I mean,
they are. I mean, if you look at some of the work they're doing, you know, they just opened up that historic movie theater that's down there. They're expanding and building some new coffee shops and different things, and more people are going there. I think what we're finding is with this growth in the Treasure Valley, it's not necessarily a zero-sum game, right? It's not the same as it was in the 90s where you were pulling from the same pool. Mm-hmm. The pool has gotten bigger, and as much as you can keep people from necessarily driving to Boise, which is kind of the way it used to be, and you can keep them in your town, you're keeping that money. And Boise's not necessarily losing because they're still attracting the people down to the Grove and these areas. You mentioned the Grove, and it brought up this picture that I tweeted out a few weeks ago, and it looked down. It was like 1987 or something. It looked down on the city of Boise and downtown area, and it was before the Grove, and it was remarkable to think how much changes. I mean, it was just parking lots. It was mm-hmm. You had like four buildings, and the city, the entire downtown sector is completely different. And I think a lot of credit goes to having a fun family area where you can go and run through a fountain and shop locally.
And it's interesting too, because I remember when I moved here 20 years ago, I very specifically remember the only thing on Eagle Road was Blue Cross of Idaho, and they were building the RC Willie. So the amount of growth, but you're right, Mike, when you look at, you don't have to come to Boise for everything anymore.
Right.
And when you can do something like the city of Caldwell is doing, you're right about quantifying what that looks like, because I would be curious to see, too, how that affects not just businesses, but schools. Right? Mm-hmm. Housing, all of this. And have you talked to the mayor about that? I mean, does he have a bigger vision at this point?
Oh, he does. And that's, you know, for stories down the road, is to expand on what that means. Because, I mean, you look at education in Caldwell, it has a bad reputation.
Mm-hmm.
The Caldwell schools need to do better. And a lot of times they're seen, even right now in the High School Athletic Association battle over where they put Caldwell in, whether 4A or 5A, even that brings up this conversation about the fact that Caldwell's a poor town, and when you have less access to resources, you have less access to maybe the camps and the training that other schools have, and so they end up sitting in 4A as opposed to going up to 5A. So it's just this, it reaches a lot of different elements, and education is going to be one of the big ways that I think Caldwell still has a tremendous amount to grow.
I want to thank all of you for coming in today. It's one of my most favorite segments of the week, so I'm happy to be back. Today on the panel, Boise State Public Radio's George Prentice, Mike Sharp with KIVI 6 on your side, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press. As always, thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having us. Bye-bye.
Up next, for National Ice Cream Day, we're going to make some homemade. Well, we're not going to. We're going to show you how to make some homemade ice cream in the backyard. I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters.